This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the small team to discuss the letter to the EDPB on Thursday, the 29th, November 2018 at 2100 UTC. On the call today, we have Thomas Rickert, Margie Milam, Mark Anderson, Kurt Pritz, Barry Cobb, Caitlin Dubergen, Marika Konings, and myself, Terry Agnew. Today's meeting is being recorded. If you please remember to state your name before speaking and also to mute when not speaking. With this, I'll turn it back over to Kurt. Please begin.
Thanks very much, Terry, and thanks for joining everybody. This is the second call because, you know, I wanted to get everybody who's interested in this topic their input on this issue in a short period of time, and it turned out the best way to do that was just to have two calls instead of one. So we had one call earlier today, and I'm sure if you're interested, Terry can resurrect the attendees of that call and go through the issues here. And the agenda ran in that meeting, and what I proposed for this one is to take a step back and, you know, at the outset maybe take a higher level view and discuss what our relationship and communications to the Data Protection Board should be. So, you know, I got on their website for the first time and read it carefully and learned some things about them and their role today. So come to understand more about them. But also, we received some emails from Alan Woods and others cautioning how we approach the Data Privacy Board, and then on the GNSO call this morning, for those of you who might have been on it, and I'm not seeing anybody, but again, others warned about how we communicate with them and how we should carefully talk to them. So I think the first part of the conversation would be about, you know, what is our relation? What's the Data Privacy Protection Board's role? And, you know, how should we run our communications with them? And then secondly, you know, what would the content of those communications be if we decide to go ahead with a communication? So it's hard to have a call for a second time, but, I think I'll pause. Is that an okay way, to go about that, this, you know, take a step back first and, talk about the bigger relationship and then maybe more about content after that. Yeah, Mark, go ahead, please. Thanks.
Thanks, Kurt. Thanks for setting that up and the overview there. I think that was good, and I agree with you. I think, you know, that reflects the points I at least tried to make on Tuesday's call, that, you know, let's take a step back and, there are times when being timely is important, and there are times when taking your time is important. And I think this is the latter, where we want to take our time and make sure we get this right. So I think, you know, my intervention on Monday or on Tuesday's call was let's take our time, be deliberate, and make sure when we're communicating with the EDPB, we're communicating right. With that, I guess, I've heard bits and pieces from some of, some of the other working group members that are on the first call, but, it might be, useful for us to get, maybe a short, recap or summary of what was discussed, or what was, the taste and flavor of that first call. I'd hate for us to undo any good progress that was done on the previous call. So maybe if you could provide a little summary of how that call went, and more information on that might help us. Thanks.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Margie, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Margie. I agree with Mark, with what Mark said. I'm worried that at this point, it's too early to get to ask them the questions, and our report isn't really readable from a layperson standpoint. If you think about like the way the report reads, it answers very specific questions, but it would confuse the heck out of somebody who wasn't in the weeds with us. And so one of the things that I really worry about is you know, you're only going to get as good of answers as the foundation you, you know, you build in the letter, which, you know, if we get to that point, I think it needs a substantial rewrite. It's not a question of changing, tweaking things, but it's creating a more fulsome document that explains what we've agreed on and where we have areas, that need input. And so I think it's early. I think we wait till after the public comment period is over and till we've done a little more thinking on some of the issues. Because if we do go back to them, we're not going to do it more than once that I can imagine. And some of the questions we have, you know, we may have relate to things like access that we haven't even talked about yet. And so I just feel like it's too early at this point.
Oops, sorry, I was on mute. Thanks very much for that, Margie. I agree with you. Go ahead, Thomas.
Thanks, and hi, everyone. I guess there are some who think that it might be dangerous to communicate with them at all. And I think we should take the opportunity and correspond with them. We got several very encouraging invitations basically to reach out to them. So I think we should do that. Is this the correct point in time? I don't know. I think we must make sure that any communication that we establish with them is characterized by diligence and professionalism. So if we ask them basic GDPR 101 questions, they will likely not want to engage with us further. So I think that those questions that can easily be answered by lawyers should not be brought in front of them. However, I think that we already have a couple of questions where, you don't find clear-cut answers or even close to clear-cut answers in legal literature. And as we, I think if we discuss the point that we might want to share with them later during this call, I can explain more what I'm trying to get at. But I guess it's the questions that even a lawyer, an independent consultant, can't shed light on are the things that we need to ask them. And I think that if we do that correctly, they will likely respond. We might not get the answers that we want, but we should ask. The second reason why I think we should ask the questions or ask them questions is that in certain areas, the letters that we receive from them are not clear. So I think it doesn't do any harm in asking them for clarification and asking them for more details on what they meant when they gave previous advice to ICANN. So I think that regardless of how the group decides, whether we're going to just point to our initial report and not offer any additional color to that, or whether we're going to ask a specific question now or later, I think we should definitely start the process of writing up questions and writing them up well now, so that we are in good shape at the point in time we want to dispatch the letter.
Thomas, could you elaborate a bit when you near the beginning of your statement, you said that we've been invited to communicate with them. What forms were those invitations, or how did we receive those?
Well, certainly there hasn't been any direct communication between EPDP and the European Data Protection Board. But what I can say is that when we did consultations on the playbook that we wrote like a year back, there was a representative from the Article 29 groups at that point, secretariat, and he said, well, if you have questions, by all means, do reach out to us. Then Katrin Bauer-Brülst, who is not European Data Protection Board, but European Commission, she said in the chat during a webinar that was held by ICANN, if you have something to discuss, we're happy to discuss. That might not be burger time. But, you know, I think that she endorsed entering into a dialogue if we have substantive information to share, not just asking open questions to the board and basically ask the board to do ICANN's or the community's work. But if you have something to offer, she indicated they would be willing to engage. And also when, you know, and that's the most recent opportunity that I reported about at the face-to-face meeting in Barcelona when we met with the European Commission delegate, and he then appointed me to Christina Monti. She said she's willing to help facilitate the meeting. And Kurt, I had introduced you to her in order to facilitate that from an administrative point of view, because it's more appropriate for you to take that on than for me as an ordinary group member. But, you know, that was also an invitation to discuss with the Commission and potentially with the Article, with the European Data Protection Board. So I think they have gone on record that they're willing to engage. I think by now they have understood the importance and the political dimension of what we're doing here, the importance of registration data and the way I can deal with it. So I think if we do it right, we might get valuable information out of it.
Thanks very much, Thomas. There was I want to respond to Mark's request to sort of recap what we talked about in the last meeting. So one of the let me find it. One of the things I found on their website was I think this is the right quote. So one of our concerns was that, in, on their website anyway, that the Protection Board, you know, says they're not a consultancy service. They provide guidance, but they provide guidance in the way of publishing guidelines on their website, not in the sense in one-on-one consultancy. And, there was also some comments, I think, by Alan Woods, and you know, actually this morning, and Regina so-called McKelly Nalen, that you know, some members of the board described their I would go as far as saying displeasure with the communications with ICANN and the types of questions that were asked, but. So I find Thomas's statement here really encouraging that we should communicate with them in some way. So the discussion a few hours ago started out exactly along these lines where we discussed the quality of the questions, the quality of the communication, the Margie put it a little better, the you know, the density of the initial report. And so, you know, we debated, you know, or we discussed whether there was any positive, aspect to having a communication or whether it was all, neutral or downside at this stage of the game. And, we also discussed the charter, requirement that we send the initial report to the Data Privacy Protection Board, but we noticed in the JNSO meeting today that that's a should and not a must. And we also decided that if we think it's a bad idea, we would not, you know, we would just go back to the JNSO Council and say, we don't want to do this. We certainly don't want to communicate with them in the wrong way because we think it's charter requirement. And so, where we left it was, gosh, I've really shortened up a lot of the conversation, but the gist of it was exactly the same lines that you're describing here. And so where we left it was that Stephanie had, in the call, she had already started redlining this letter. And so I think we won't kill the communication with the Data Protection Board yet, but we should look at what Stephanie's doing, where she was going to shorten it up to a page or so and essentially eliminate the questions. And I suggested it be along the line of, since it's in its communications to ICANN, the Data Protection Board said, you know, here's some more advice. And by the way, you ought to get a move on. We would give some notice to the Data Protection Board that we've gotten a move on. We've created this initial report. We're working, you know, furiously at it. And, are a good part of the way there, and to let you know that we will follow this with our final report and with our recommendations, and we'll ask you to provide your feedback at that time. And then we also recognized, along the same lines we discussed here, we shouldn't be going to the Data Protection Board with questions that are, you know, what's preferable, A or B, but rather go to the Data Protection Board and say, here's our recommendations, you know, what do you think? And have them hopefully approve, but, you know, give an opinion on our recommendation and not ask them to make choices or legal opinions for us. So, and in the meantime, then, in order to, there were none on the call that really thought the questions in the letter were that hard from a legal standpoint. And so I think, as somebody on this call has already alluded to, farm these questions out to get our own independent legal advice on them, like we talked about a few meetings ago. And have those, that legal opinion or those legal opinions, whatever we need, inform our choices and inform our debate. So, I wanted to follow up with one more point, but I'll let Margie go ahead.
Sure. I think after the final report's written, it's too late, because if you want it to factor into our analysis, like if the group is going to potentially go one way or another on, it'd have to be a few issues. You'd want to have it at a point before your final report. Otherwise, you get the feedback, and what do you do with it? And as I think about what they're likely to respond to, I suspect what Thomas was saying was correct, that, you know, focus on things that haven't been answered already. So if we're going to get legal advice on things that, you know, that are, have already, you know, are easier to answer, if you will, then that's probably a better avenue for getting answers. But raise the question on areas that aren't so clear and are likely to provide guidance to other people, you know, because if I put myself in their shoes, you know, they're probably getting lots of requests for certain things, you know, you know, how do you interpret the performance of contracts, you know, as an example, right? That seems to be something that matters to us. And if we get the answer one way, we might choose the policy to go one way, you know, differently than we have so far, because we don't have the assurances that we are interpreting it correctly. So if there is going to be a communication, to me, it seems to be before the final report, but not yet now. Maybe it's, you know, after we've done some more work, after we've analyzed the public comments. And then we focus the questions on things that aren't clear yet from the guidance that's already out there. And we'll probably, you know, because it isn't clear, we might actually get, you know, responses, because it'll help not just us, but it'll help others, and, you know, who are looking at this from other industries, other perspectives.
Thanks, Margie. I think as soon as we're ready with a competent communication, we might go ahead with that. And I think, you know, I think we might make an immediate communication now, but we'll decide that when we see the quality of it as it evolves and decide if it makes sense to send that or not. Mark?
Thanks, Kurt, and I appreciate the recap. Thank you for that. And you know what Tomas and Marty have said. You know, I think that's really, really, really thoughtful and makes sense. I think it's, you know, maybe a shame we couldn't all be on the same call. Sounds like you had a good first call. You know, water under the bridge, right? I think a couple of things you hit on that I think are important to you. One of the things Tomas said is, you know, he said some people aren't sure we should send a letter at all. You know, and I want to say I agree with Tomas that, you know, we shouldn't be afraid to send a letter or to reach out to the EBB. You know, so I'm not one of the people, opposed to, sending a letter. You know, I think we should, you know, we're wrestling with some challenging issues, and, you know, as Tomas has pointed out, there's some willingness on their part to, engage with us and help come up with a GDPR compliant solution. So, you know, so we should certainly, take advantage of that, but, you know, it is important that we ask the right questions. And there again, I agree with, you know, what Thomas was laying out. And, you know, my understanding, you know, is, you know, I've heard, you know, people mention this, you know, they're not, you know, Kurt, you put in chat, they're not a consultancy service. They're not, you know, they're, you know, the A in DPA does not stand for advisor. This is, I think, the other one I've heard. And so, you know, my understanding is that, you know, what they'll respond to best is if we provide, you know, when they're provided with a solution and asked to weigh in on whether or not that solution is GDPR compliant. And so I think that sort of gets to the heart of what, Tomas was suggesting. So, that's maybe, just a roundabout way of saying I thought Tomas made a good point, and, I'd agree with that. And I think, maybe one other point before I stop talking. I think I lost my other point, so maybe I'll just stop. I'll take that as a sign and stop talking now. I've done enough of that already. So, thanks, Kirk.
Thanks, Mark. I wish I stopped talking every time I lose my train of thought, but sadly I forge on. Padia?
First I want to say that what Margie actually said does make sense. However, delaying the contact with the European Data Protection Board, I don't think is a good idea, because we should keep in mind the amount of time they need to take to respond to us. And I think that it could take them up to 2 months to make a response, or it could take up to 2 months until we get a response. And considering that factor, delaying the communication with the European Data Protection Board, I think it's not a wise thing to do. Another thing, I also liked what Thomas said today during the webinar, where he said that the questions should be mainly about areas that are unclear. And of course, yes, this is the aim. And I would like to ask Thomas, like, from a legal point of view, what areas does he think are not clear and actually require answers? Thank you.
So, Hadi, your question about clarity was about, I think Thomas' comment was about the letter we got that I can receive back from the EDPB, right? Is that your question, Hadia?
Actually, yes, I have, yeah.
Yeah. So, Thomas, do you want to respond?
Happy to, Kurt. Thanks very much. That is a point regarding the first issue that we raised in the letter about third party data, technical contact or administrative contact. The European Data Protection Board explains that the third party should be informed about the data collection. At the same time, they say that the data can be populated or that the same data can be given for the individual contact point. So if you look at, if you allow for the different contact points to have the same data, the question is why then have all the individual contact points and not just one? So that would be the principle of data minimization. And I think that our group has established that if it is optional for the registered name holder to appoint a designee, then that means that the data is not necessarily required. Because if it were required, it would be mandatory and not optional. And that suggests that you need consent for that data processing. Yet the letter of the European Data Protection Board alludes to Article 14. Article 14 deals with data collection from persons or entities other than the data subject. And that would be the case here. So you go to the registered name holder, and the registered name holder would then provide data from a third-party admin fee or taxi. And that would be fine if an information were sufficient, but if you have consent-based processing, GDPR is not entirely clear whether in that case still an information is good enough or whether you need to evidence having obtained the third party's consent. So the European Data Protection Board's letter suggests that information is sufficient, but from what they say, and looking at the principle of data minimization, it suggests that we're dealing with consent-based processing where potentially more is required. It would make our lives extremely more easy if just providing information were sufficient, and if not, the full catalog of requirements of Article 7 that's dealing with consent-based processing would need to be fulfilled. But that's the point where the European Data Protection Board has been ambiguous in its letter, at least the way I read it. And secondly, that's the point where GDPR is unclear, and we've been racking our brains and studying all sorts of legal commentary about the relationship between Article 14 and the requirements in Article 7. And I guess that's a gray area point that's worthwhile asking them to clarify their own statement, and at the same time explaining in greater detail of what the issue is. And I just gave you a little glimpse of what my legal rationale for this question would be. I hope that makes sense.
Thank you, Thomas. I have just one on something you said in the very beginning, where you said that if it's optional, that means it's not it's mandatory or it's not essential. And actually, I don't agree with that. Being optional to the user does not mean that it's not mandatory. It could be necessary for some of the users and unnecessary for others. So you put it as an option, so that those registrants for which this field is necessary are able to make use of it. So to just conclude, since it's optional, it's not essential, it is not actually correct from my point of view. And another thing, with respect to natural versus legal persons, Do you see any gray areas there?
Hadia, can you please say that last sentence again?
With respect to natural versus legal persons, do you find any gray areas in this regard which requires a question to the European Data Protection Board?
So, Kurt, I don't want to make this a dialogue between me and Hadia, so please let me know whether you would like me to answer.
I'm sorry for that.
No, it's not your fault. I just want to yield the microphone to Kurt.
Yeah, so thank you very much, Thomas. But I don't think it'd be harmful for you to answer the question, but I'd like to just stick with that first one for a minute and say, So I think I think what we've all said on this call and what was said on the previous call is that our communication with the Data Protection Board needs to be excellent in every way. And I think Thomas, for example, has posed what I think is the one question that I don't know the answer to, or that I couldn't pretty well guess the answer to of the questions we have. And I think the issue is whether one question is how to pose that question to the Data Privacy Board, and the second is, are there any other issues? Hadi's bringing up other issues. So are there any other issues that we would want to get their input on? Again, my understanding is that it would be better for us to develop a solution and then provide that to the Data Privacy Board rather than ask them, and either our question is consent required or is just notification to the third party required in the instance that Thomas brought up. So I think that what I'm hearing we should get to is that given that Stephanie from the other call is drafting a much more narrow form of communication, sort of a notice to the Data Protection Board of the work we're doing. We should consider if we want a question answered by them. But I still think that question should be in the form of a conclusion, right? That one of our solutions for the technical contact is, a note. Is it a notice or a consent? What are we going to require there? So that would require, I think, that'll require a collaboration among a few of us to see if there's any issues we want to pose to them now. So that was sort of talking and thinking at the same time that really wasn't effective. I mean, Thomas, go ahead, Margie.
Sure, this is Margie. I think what Hadia raised is one of the reasons why I'm uncomfortable with the letter. I agree with her view on, and not to get into the substance, but I agree with the way she views Thomas's comment. And when we write the letter, the reason I'm raising it is I want to make sure that the letter and the questions are posed in a way that they don't assume an answer or that they don't assume an interpretation that others don't agree with. And so that's the hard part about it. If we get to the point of asking questions, it needs to be neutral from the perspective of asking the question rather than leading them to an answer. And I've seen in the initial report and in the draft letter, not even knowing anything, I could guess what the answer is going to be because of the facts haven't been laid out sufficiently neutrally in order to get the honest, the answer and have them have all the facts available to them to answer the question. So her question really kind of highlighted some of the concerns that I have about the letters to make sure that the facts are laid out and that there's no conclusions in the questions themselves.
Right.
Mark?
Thanks, Kurt. Yeah, I agree with what Margie said. You know, certainly how the questions are asked is important, and you know, certainly part of the reason why I've cautioned taking our time here to make sure we get it right and make sure we're answering the right question. I did, however, remember what the other point I was going to make, and that was and that was something you mentioned legal counsel, Kurt, and so I gather the idea of getting outside legal counsel to advise us came up on the previous call, and I think that's great news, right? I think that could be very very beneficial and perhaps a prerequisite for us going to the EDPB talking to legal counsel particularly about the interim report and the conclusions and recommendations we've drawn up there, having a neutral third party look at that and provide expert advice could be very beneficial. I don't know if I have the gist of it, or understand that correctly, but maybe if you can expand on that, that would be good. And go back to what Hadia said. I took Hadia's Hadia's points to be a perfect example of why why there are different opinions, since there are differing opinions on this. I think, some of the things that she raised are things that ultimately we're going to have to figure out how to go to the EDPB, for to get, further clarification. Again, it's important that we're asking the right questions in the right way. And I think that's what we all want to get to. So thank you for that.
Great. Thanks, Mark. And so, yes, there is a universal agreement on the previous call across all the stakeholder groups that were represented that we should pose these questions to a legal counsel first. I just want to check one thing with Margie to make sure I heard okay. So on the call this morning, there was another sense that we should not be asking the Data Protection Board questions. We should, especially if there's a choice involved, is this a better approach or is this a better approach? What we should be doing is telling them, here's our approach. Is this GDPR compliant, or are there any issues for that? So in that scenario, it's sort of difficult to ask, an objective question. And there's especially those on the call with, and maybe Thomas can fill us in here, but those on the call who have worked with the Article 29 working group and others, on the board, had a fairly clear sense of that. And I don't know if that seems to me to kind of contradict what you were suggesting. So I want to make sure we're communicating and then figure out what to do from there.
Sure, if I can respond.
Yeah, sure.
I think there's kind of two different things. Like getting a somewhat blessing, although it won't necessarily be a blessing, on the final solution is definitely something we should do at some point. But the question is some of the answers relevant enough that they could shift where our solution goes? And I'll give you an example of that. The natural legal person distinction. If we get the answer that you can rely on self-certification, right, and I think that's one of our questions, then it may affect how the group looks at that issue and may enable us to come up with a solution that includes the natural legal person, making the natural legal person distinction, because we feel comfortable that the risk of liability is mitigated. So waiting until we have the solution, in my view, it's almost too late. I mean, it's nice to have the blessing. I totally get why we need the blessing at the end, but from an analysis point of view, it doesn't help us, because we're gonna at that point have already adopted a solution that's overly conservative because we're assuming that making a self-certification doesn't help in from the liability perspective. You see what I'm saying? And so that's why, you know, I actually did, you know, reconsider when Hadia mentioned the 2 months it takes to get a response. That kind of leaned me to the point of, well, if we're going to ask questions, we probably do need to do it, maybe right after the public comment period closes so we can get input on what the questions should be. But doing it before the final solution is kind of, you know, agreed on in the group.
Thomas, go ahead.
Yeah, I guess Margie is making a good point. The challenge for us is that we have a tight schedule that we're working against, and advice, if we get any, from the Data Protection Board might be late in the process. And maybe that's something that we need to put in writing or play back to the council and the ICANN board as well. Ultimately, we want to avoid that ICANN or community members are being sanctioned, are being exposed to liability, both from the authorities as well as from group data subjects. And it can hit pretty much everyone. You know, it can hit those who are revealing data. It can hit those who are asking others to collect data. It can hit those who are requesting data because if they don't have the appropriate legal basis to then further process the data, they might be facing risks as well. And I think that we need to be cognizant that even if we get feedback from the Data Protection Board late, let's say when we've already passed our report onto the board, we need to go back to the desk and rework things. You know, so I think that we should try to get responses as soon as reasonably possible, and be open-minded and try to rework things as required in order to avoid liability risk for everyone.
How do we, and I think that this is for Thomas, but anybody can answer it, but how do we, like, is there a way to, let's see, I'm thinking and talking at the same time again. given the apparent reticence of the Data Protection Board to be a consultant and, you know, through the reporting of, you know, Alan and others, their reticence to answer questions or be put on the spot on certain situations. How do we introduce the idea that we're puzzling over these things? Is there a way to not just throw a question over the, you know, even, let's say we got this thing perfectly worded, right? So, we're happy with the wording of the question. Is there a way to introduce the idea that we are puzzling over these things? And we'd like to talk to somebody about them, without just throwing the document over the wall so it comes as kind of a surprise. But I think and partial answer to my own question, I remember, one of Stephanie Pern's comments this morning is maybe we should be working instead of with the Data Protection Board, maybe we should be working with a Data Protection Authority. And, she suggested the one in Belgium since ICANN has an office in Brussels, sort of a hub office in Brussels. So I guess it's a long question for Thomas. Is there a way to introduce the idea that while we make our questions better, and while we get some legal opinion on the issue, is there a way to introduce the idea that we're puzzling over certain issues that, you know, might affect our policy decisions? Oh, go ahead, Thomas.
So I guess exploring to liaise with the Belgian EPA is great. I think the beauty of discussing with the European Data Protection Board is that it would include the Belgian EPA, and we would probably get more visibility with other data protection authorities as well. And the reason why I'm saying this is because we will not get clear-cut advice that will shield everyone from cases or from cases being made against them, because the authorities are independent. But if the European Data Protection Board issues an advice, issues a correspondence as they've done with their working papers and through other channels, opinionating on certain things, then the chances of players being sanctioned are, I guess, close to nil. And I guess probably a way to proceed would be to try reach out to the European Data Protection Board if and when we're ready, and maybe in parallel try to get contact to the Belgian DPA and ask him for an exchange of cards. And I guess since the PDP manual, and Marika will be much better placed to speak to this or other staff members, doesn't really allow for, changing things on the fly. I guess what we would need to deal with is, I can't force anyone to do things that are illegal. But if we find out in the last minute after we've finalized our recommendation that we got certain things wrong, then we would need to ask counsel to start a revision process of the policy, as we recently did with Red Cross Red Crescent names PDP, and in the meantime, forbear enforcement of the parts that need to be revisited. But that's not necessarily for the letter to the EPDB, European Data Protection Board. I always mix up these acronyms. But maybe this is something that we should liaise with the GNSO Council and probably the board to find an agreement on how to deal with scenarios where we need to revisit our recommendations.
Yeah, so I'm seeing a positive response in the chat too about consulting with the Brussels or some other DPA, and I don't want to get into the weeds of natural versus legal persons. I think there's a lot of policy discussion that has to occur around that. If we're going to develop a consensus to that, there we could make a case that, a recommendation would be contingent upon a certain legal outcome or something like that. So I think there's a few different ways to skin that cat, but there's policy discussion to be had about that too. So what I'm hearing is that there's a large intersection of agreement between this group and this morning's group. This morning's group really wanted to go forward with no questions to the Data Protection Board. And but I think, I have to look at the notes. I think that we might have agreement on how to approach the DPA. So I'll check with the staff and look at the notes and see that. So we have a couple efforts going on. One is, like I alluded to before, Stephanie's redlining the letter in a way she sees fit. So I saw no reason to get in the way of that. That's a good effort, and we should look at it and then decide what to do with it. I think there's another effort to make the questions clearer. There's a third thing to secure some legal expertise so we can put these questions now that we have them in front of independent legal counsel and get an opinion. In that case, potentially the questions could still be a little sloppy because we could you know, we could, you know, get a vague response back and then do some refinement. So, we have that. So I think, and retaining that legal counsel, I think writing the statement of work, I've already talked to Diane Platt about that, and that's a quick turnaround, but then we have to go through the ICANN process. That'll take a little bit of time, so we'll embark on that right away. So I'm hearing that we want our communication to the Data Protection Board to be excellent. So we're certainly not going to publish the letter the way it's drafted, and then do those other things. Adia?
Actually, I like the suggestions that you just said. So we wait for Stephanie's a letter. We are looking for legal input and trying to make our questions clear. But I think also we need to have a timeline for that. So we need to know when do we expect the results of those three items to be in hand so that we can go forward.
Thanks, Fabia. Mark, you've been quiet for a while. Does this seem like an okay approach to you?
Thanks, Kurt. Yes, I almost typed in chat plus one to what you just said. I mean, it sounds, I feel comfortable with what you laid out. You know, it sounds like it sounds like we've got a good plan and we're marching down a path that seems logical. So, I think you outlined sort of three different things we're doing, Stephanie's letter, working on more detailed questions and retaining our own, outside counsel to provide advice and help with the questions. I mean, I'm pretty comfortable with that. So that's why I was quiet.
Okay. Excellent. All right, with that, the notes are halfway done, so we'll put together notes and send them around, and I'll start actions on this stuff tomorrow. Does anybody have any closing comments? I see yours, Hadia. All right, so this is my fourth EPDP call of the day, so I'm ready for the day to end. I want to thank you guys for getting on and your constructive conversation. It was just like the call this morning. It was really helpful, and we're about the same amount of time. So thanks very much, and have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye, everyone.
Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Thank you very much for joining. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.